All right, welcome to the Free Stretch here on JoeBucksFan.com. I am Bobby Fenton, and we've got a Week 4 edition of the show, a 3-0 edition of the show coming at you today as we get set for what I guess you'd say is the second, what feels like a really big game of the season in these first four. Of course, the opener against Atlanta would be counted as a big game. That's a division game, and the Bucks got that one. They've gotten two more since then, all three in the final minute, and there are only... well, just a handful of undefeated teams left, and the only two to meet head-to-head this Sunday, the Philadelphia Eagles, our old friends, coming down to Tampa. Same time of year as last year. A year ago, they came down here and lost to the Bucks, and became, eventually, only the second team in history to lose to the Buccaneers and win the Super Bowl in the same season. The 2009 Saints also did it. And looking back now, that's also... they've only lost one other time since then, going back to that Bucks blowout in, what was it, week four, I think, also week four last year? It might have been week three last year. But going back to that, they only lost one other game, and that was to the Commanders, and that was when they had injury issues and Jalen Hurts didn't play. But that's it. They went on and won the Super Bowl, and they've won all their games this year so far, and now they're back here again. In fact, they'll be here on Friday, a day earlier than most NFL teams travel. For the shorter trips, at least, if you come cross-country, sometimes they come a day early. But the Eagles are coming from Philadelphia on Friday to try to, quote-unquote, acclimate to the heat. And so we'll see if that helps them out. But either way, we've got a lot to get to on today's show after a thrilling, if maybe not the preferred way to do it, but a thrilling Bucks win this past Sunday over the Jets, in which they came back in the final minute despite leading by double digits late in the game. And they've done it three times now. In fact, they're the first team in NFL history to go 3-0, winning all three of their games in the final minute, trailing in the final minute, and getting it done. And so now they'll have what is easily going to amount to their toughest challenge yet. So thanks for joining us. Thanks to the Joes for setting me up and giving me the chance to get in front of all of you here on the best website anywhere, TV, internet, radio, for Bucks coverage. Year-round, 365 days a year, JoeBucksFan.com. Email me if you want to, by the way, BobbyGameDay@Yahoo.com, or find me on Twitter and Blue Sky, both same thing, at BobbyGameDay, BobbyGameDay. So, first things first, I want to talk about, I mean, I'm not going to get too much into the Jets game at this point, with the Eagles game now looming, and plus, I mean, so many things happen in the Jets game that I could do. And we'll go over a few things. I'm not going to ignore it, but you could do a whole show or a whole series of shows on just what happened on Sunday, this past Sunday. But what I want to talk about first is just the idea of what the Bucks are, what we know after 3 weeks, okay? Because they're 3-0. As you all know and don't need to be reminded, but I'll say it anyway, this is the National Football League. This is pro sports. There are no committees. There are no polls. There are no style points. And there is no subjectivity when it comes to determining how a champion is decided. It is all done on the field. It is done with a system. It is done with standings that are cold, that are hard, and that are irrefutable. And yes, we all know the whole Bill Parcells line. You hear it quoted all the time around this time of year when teams are off to whatever start they're off to. You are what your record says you are. So, the Bucks are 3-0. And if you just go by the records, that puts them among the best teams in the NFL. In fact, it ties them for best record in the NFL, obviously. Now, if you look deeper, and we know, you know, you look at the metrics of the whole thing, if you're into that, and the Bucks don't exactly come out glowing. They are 3-0, and yet they're the only team of the group of 3-0 teams that is not in the top 10 in any of the following categories: total offense, total defense, scoring offense, scoring defense. All of the other 3-0 teams, Buffalo, Indianapolis somehow, the Chargers, the Eagles, the Bucks, and the 49ers, there are six of them. The other five all are in the top 10 in at least one of those categories. The Bucks are not. DVOA, which the thing about DVOA is it doesn't care what your record is. It doesn't care about outcomes. It knows the standings already provide for that. It just wants to see how you played. I'm not, you know, I know some people are into analytics more than others and some aren't, but whatever. Point is, DVOA, the Bucks are 16th, you know, middle of the pack, not even in playoff position. You want to get into opponent record. Again, not saying this is college football. It's not. We don't have to worry about strength of schedule. We don't have to worry about oh, they ain't played nobody. You know, we don't have to worry about any of that in the NFL. But that cry is going out there. Greg Allman actually tweeted out the numbers on that. He covers the Bucs for Fox and covers the NFL for Fox. Here are the opponent records for the six NFL 3-0 teams. And these are opponent records against the teams other than the three losses they have against, you know, the teams that, like, the undefeated teams. So, the Eagles and the 49ers, their opponents, not counting their losses to the Eagles and 49ers, both 4-2 in their other six games. They've beaten some quality competition. Eagles have beaten the Rams and the Chiefs already. The Chargers' opponents, 3-3 besides their three losses to the Chargers. Then the Bills, Bucks, and Colts, all three of them, 1-5 in their other games besides the ones they lost to those teams. So, the Bucks haven't beaten anybody. Okay, fine. I mean, maybe not. Although I will say I think Houston's a little bit better than they've let on with their 0-3 record, and they're going to bounce back. Jets probably aren't that good. And then, of course, you've got Atlanta in week one. I'm totally fine if Atlanta just ends up being terrible. I'd love to see it. We all would. I got a feeling they're going to be okay. I know they had a tough go in Carolina and Charlotte this weekend. Got shut out 30-0. Michael Penix, he still only has one touchdown pass, and that was against the Bucs in week one. Hasn't thrown one since then. They fired, if you want to say scapegoated, whatever you want to call it, they fired their wide receivers coach, Riddell Anthony, former Gator and Buck receiver, and they moved their offensive coordinator from the press box down to the field. That's like one of those early signs that something's cracking. That's one of the first, oh, we're going to move our coordinator and mix it up. He used to be upstairs, now he's going to be on the sideline. Hey, fine, whatever. Like I said, I hope the whole thing just completely spirals downward and the wheels completely come off of the Falcons' 2025 season, just like everybody else. But I think they're actually not bad either. And that was a good win on the road in the division in week one. So, yes, the competition may not have been great, but it doesn't matter. Like Bill Parcells, right? Like we said, you are what your record says you are. But that only goes so far, because here's the thing. I know that when it comes to the playoffs and comes to the standings and all those things, that yes, your record's all that matters. But when you're trying to look at what your record will eventually be and where your season will eventually go, no, you aren't just what your record says you are. How you have played matters. And so for the Bucks, and here's what the mitigating thing with this, I'll say it again, is the injuries. Because to be where the Bucks are right now, I think is extraordinary. I don't care who the three teams they've played, given what they've had to deal with, is outstanding, extraordinary. You couldn't possibly have hoped for anything this good. And especially given the upcoming schedule, they needed to stockpile these wins any way they could, injuries be damned, and they've done it. I mean, you know, you need these wins because you've got, obviously, the Eagles this weekend, which we're going to get into. You've got Seattle on the road after that. San Francisco comes in, a home game after that. Then at Detroit on a Monday night on the road up there. And then you get the Saints before the bye. So before you get to the Saints game, just those next four games, already being 3-0 gives you the luxury now. Let's say you go 2-2 in those four, which even doing that's not any small task, by the way. But I would take it. I hate to say, I mean, you never want to lose any game, but you told me we could go 2-2 in these next four, and now we're 5-2 and then beat the Saints before the bye and 6-2 going into the bye. Hell yes, I'm totally fine with that. And I think any Bucks fan, again, nobody wants to say, oh yeah, we're cool losing, but privately, I think Todd Bowles would say, yeah, I'd take that too. So, you know, the Bucks have had to overcome, and they have. And in the NFL, and nobody's that bad. Everybody's pretty close together. These are good wins. And certainly they have a chance at a hell of a win on Sunday when the Eagles come into town. They're going to get here on Friday, like I said, to try to acclimate to the heat. I think, let me talk about that for a second. I think people are talking about it. As I say, let me talk about that. I think people are talking way too much about it. It's been a big story the past few days. I even saw it like on Pro Football Talk, like nationally. Oh, Eagles are flying a day early to get used to the Tampa heat, blah, blah, blah. Which, by the way, the forecast for Sunday, if you're going, or if you're just interested, is about, I mean, I'm recording this show at 2:30 in the afternoon on Thursday. And right now it's like 89 degrees out there, sunny. Heat index is up there in the high 90s. That's almost exactly what it's going to be on Sunday. Temps around the 90-degree mark, heat index closer to the high 90s, sunny. There are some scattered showers that could come in at some point during the game. Pretty standard stuff. I mean, nothing, like I said, you know, unless you're listening to this at night, go outside right now. If you live in the Tampa Bay area, I know we have listeners all over, but go outside right now. It's probably not that far off from that. And listen, I grew up here my whole life. There's two schools of thought on the whole heat thing. First of all, I don't think getting here a day early makes a lick of difference. It takes several days to acclimate to any climate thing or altitude or any of that stuff. If the Eagles want to do it, that's fine. But beyond that, you know, some people think, oh, hey, the Bucks live in this. They train in it. They're used to it. It's an advantage. I've always thought that. But then Rick Stroud, who's the Bucks beat writer for the Tampa Bay Times, he posted something on his Twitter feed, I think it was the other day, 2 days ago, that I kind of never thought about. But he said, in his opinion, it's a disadvantage. He said, you're more likely to be dehydrated just living here and constantly dealing with all the time. I know the Bucks have an indoor practice facility and all that stuff. But just, again, just being here, all of us, like right now as we speak, I am indoors in my kitchen recording this show. And I don't like to spend a lot of money on AC. I don't like to wear my AC down. It's bad for the environment. It's bad for the electric bill. It's bad for lots of things. So we keep the house pretty warm. I'm not like dripping with sweat, but I'm kind of sweating right now in my own house. I could turn the AC down, but I'm fine with it. My point is, day after day after day, Rick Stroud is saying it enervates you in a way, and you're actually more likely to be dehydrated than if you just come in here for a couple of days, just being here all the time. And I thought about that. I was like, you know what? That might be true. I know, like, when I go out to play Frisbee every Sunday morning, our Ultimate Frisbee game, which if you play Ultimate Frisbee, by the way, this is kind of a probably a pretty thin overlap on the Venn diagram, but anybody who plays Ultimate Frisbee, email me, bobbygameday@yahoo.com. We're always looking for players in our game. We play every Sunday morning. So do I go outside and like try to get as hot as I can to get ready for the game? No, I actually cool my body down. I put ice packs on the back of my neck and stuff like for about 15, 20 minutes before I get in the car to go play our game because I want to start out cooler. Like if you can lower your core temperature, it actually helps. So maybe Rick Stroud's right. I don't know. I do know last year the Eagles players, I remember there was a few guys, didn't like Juergens, there was a few guys that going down with cramps in that game. Well, that happens to the Bucks too. I mean, you know, when you're playing football in heat like that, no matter who you are, it's bound to happen, players on both sides. But anyway, the Eagles will be here on Friday. Some people are, oh, the heat's in their head. Some people are saying, oh, it's in the Bucks' head too, because now the Bucks are talking about it. Baker Mayfield had some quotes about it. Either way, I think people are talking about it too much, and I say that as somebody who just spent the better part of 5 minutes talking about it. But here's where it does matter. Forget about the players. If you're going to the football game on Sunday, and I know some people who are, I may go. I don't go to every game, and when I do go, I mean, I have a media pass sometimes, but I always, like, a lot of times I just buy tickets. Either way, folks, when I go to a Bucks game, I'm out there in the sea. I'm not up there in the air-conditioned press box. It's sealed. You can't open the windows. I like to be able to hear the crowd. I don't go up there. I mean, I might go up there for a little bit, but I go out there. I'm in the gen pop, as they say, the general population. Just like always, because I've always gone to Bucks games my whole life, not just as a member of the media. But if you're going to the game, these Sunday, September 1 p.m. games are tough. And I would say this, too. I mean, it's not as hard. I'm not saying it's as hard to sit in the sun for 3 hours as it is to run around with a helmet and full pads on for 3 hours. You're much more likely to be dehydrated. You're much more likely to cramp and all that stuff running around. But I will say it's more unpleasant. Like when I'm out in the sun doing things, my mind's, I'm playing, you know, my mind's not on it. Whatever it is, whether you play pickup basketball during the daytime or if you go play tennis or ultimate frisbee or football, whatever. But just sitting still in a seat with like the sun beating down on me, I hate that much more than like playing a actual sport out there. I don't know if that's just me or not, but I find it very, very deeply unpleasant to just be sitting down stationary in the heat. And I'm in good shape. I don't want to make fun of people, but a lot of people like can't even do that. Like some of these people can't actually go to a Bucks game in the daytime without like passing out, and you know, you got to get the paramedics and all that stuff. And that's different people have different health conditions and all that stuff. It's not that bad, but it does kind of suck. And I was not at the Jets game this past weekend. I was watching it. In fact, though, my son had a golf tournament, so I was out walking 9 holes in the height of the heat on Sunday. And, you know, yeah, again, nobody wants to do that when you could have played at 4 or primetime, all that stuff. So for the fans, I think it matters more than the players. Good luck to anybody who's going to the game. You can't just bring an umbrella in there either. That'd be nice if you just bring an umbrella, not for rain, but just to hold over your head for the sun. But for now, it's what we have to deal with. And I say for now because I have a feeling, and this is just me saying this, I have a feeling that the next big thing, even besides the Rays Stadium thing for Tampa Bay sports facilities, is Raymond James Stadium, maybe go in the direction of like what they did to Joe Robbie Stadium, or now Hard Rock Stadium in South Florida, where it's still going to be an outdoor stadium, but maybe they build something similar. This is just me saying this. I'm not, this isn't some inside info I have, but you know how they put like the roof covering over most of the seats? It covers like 2/3 of the seats now. And the only seats it doesn't cover are like the really good seats. So I could see something like that. I still maintain, by the way, and we were a little bit behind. And I love Raymond James Stadium. Raymond James Stadium is great, but we were a little bit behind the curve because they built Raymond James Stadium in 1998, or they finished it in 1998. They were building it pretty much throughout 96 and 97. And it's very cookie cutter, you know, very plain, very open. Nothing really fancy about the architecture. And it was only like 2 years later that Seattle's place opened. And I don't know if you've ever been to Seattle Stadium. I've been there a couple times. But it's got that, first of all, it looks cool. But second of all, same thing. It's like got that covering built in where it covers about 2/3 of the seats. And the field is still open air. It's still open to the elements, which I like. I mean, I know it's easy for me to say, but I've always liked football stadiums, especially. Even more than baseball stadiums. Football stadiums, I feel like weather should play a little bit of a factor. So when it's open air, you get that, but you also get the fans covered up a little bit. And I don't even care about the rain. I'm talking about cover me from the sun. Maybe that's something coming up down the road for Raymond James in the next 10 years or something like that, as an aside. But for now, no such luck. And there ain't much. Like, there's usually maybe somewhere where you can find some respite somewhere. Like, maybe there's a shady corner, depending. Like, the swamp is like that in Gainesville. If you get just the right angle, sometimes the press box, even for a day game, you can get some shade in certain seats. They ain't anywhere. And maybe a couple of those club seats, those pewter-colored ones that go up close to the boxes, a couple of those. But for anybody in the red seats anywhere, there's nowhere to hide, baby. You're going to be hurting if you want to go out there. And just make sure to wear the sunscreen figure. I mean, I did this. I used to go literally every game. I went to every single home game. Literally, counting preseason, from 1997, really the end of 96, I went to the last handful, all the way through like 2008. I went to like 100 and something games in a row at Raymond James without missing one. And most of those were Sunday 1 p.m. too. So we'll see how it goes this Sunday against the Eagles. And looking at this game, we'll look at it in a minute and go over some. There's some numbers in here and some things that I'm actually more encouraged by. Right when the Bucks had their second half meltdown. I don't know, maybe meltdown's a strong word. But when they blew the lead on Sunday, then they had the really emotional comeback, last second field goal, all that stuff. I felt like, oh boy. I mean, I'm glad, no, not that I'm glad they won, but I felt like, yeah, but we're lucky to be here at 3-0. We're probably up against it next Sunday. And then there's some numbers, which I'll get into coming up, that we'll talk about to kind of maybe make you feel better, because I actually feel a little bit better about this matchup now that I've started looking into it than I did just on my snap judgments on Sunday. But just to go over the Jets game real quick, just a few things that stood out to me. I'm not going to rehash all the refereeing, the Ibuka catch that wasn't reviewed, the Alan Lazard touchdown that he probably didn't catch, the million holding calls, all that, whatever. It's in the past now. But first of all, Chase McLaughlin, we talked about last week after the Houston game. And he missed that 38-yard kick, and he had missed a couple in Atlanta before. And I was worried about him mentally, because he can do the job, but you just, you know, once a guy misses a couple, they start to feel shaky. And he's always been kind of like a robot. And you want that. You want these unfeeling cyborg kickers that just come in and their leg swings and it goes through. And they're, yeah. And I know it's not like that, but it seems like that with some of these guys. And so I thought, uh-oh, here's a chink in the mental armor, and this could be a problem. He responded with a huge day. 5 field goals. He was 5 for 6, and of course the 6 was a blocked one, not a miss, but it counts as being 5 for 6. And it's the difference by far in a game where they needed every single point. And you know, that makes you feel a lot better, obviously, going forward. I'm not going to think about these things as much, and I think he probably won't think about it as much, just go out and do his job. But you could tell by the end, the confidence was there. Even the block kick didn't really affect him. Although I'll say this too. Todd Bowles, who's gotten tons better with all of his, you know, we criticized him a lot the first couple years of his tenure with the way he handled fourth down go or kick decisions and a few other like just game management type things. And he's gotten tons better. We almost never talk about it anymore. He did that thing, and Arians did this against, what was it, the Giants, was it? I can't remember who it was, but a few years ago, where they intentionally take a delay a game penalty and move a kick back 5 yards. And folks, don't talk to me about angles. Don't talk to me about, oh, he likes it better here. It is always, this is true for putts, this is true for field goals, this is true for shots in basketball. I don't care what it is. The further away you get from something, the lower your odds of making it. So they took it an intentional delay of game to make, this is the field goal that got blocked. And it could vary, I'm talking about process here, not results, because it could have just as easily gotten blocked from 38 as it did from 43. But still, why are you doing that? Don't make it harder. And after the game, Bull said, no, he's got better numbers from that distance than he does. No, he doesn't, okay? First of all, you got the numbers right here. Greg Allman, again, hats off to him. He put these out there. Chase McLaughlin, career. Forget about dividing it by tens or into 10-yard increments. Let's get real precise. From 35 to 39 yards, this was a would-be 38-yarder. From 35 to 39 yards, career Chase McLaughlin, 90%. Okay? From 40 to 44, again, it became a 43-yarder after the delay of game, 59%. 90% versus 59% from those two distances, and you chose the further one. And for those who are not math majors, that means you're about four times more likely to miss. He's about four times more likely to miss, I should say, from 43 than from 38. That was not a good play. Before the kick got blocked, like I said, that could have happened anything. And how did you feel when that happened, by the way? That's something that maybe it tells you something about this Bucks team, or maybe it tells you something about the state of being a Bucks fan in 2025, which isn't bad. Because when that happened, maybe it tells you something about the Jets. Whatever it tells you, even as that kick was being scooped up and even as that guy was running into the end zone, I was not happy for sure, but I didn't freak out. I was like, okay, well, you know, a minute 49 and three timeouts. I mean, I think I'd still rather be the Bucks than the Jets. Like, I felt at that point, even as that was happening, I felt like at no point were the Bucks win odds lower than 50%. Even with that, I was like, I would have been more worried, in fact, if they had, like, gotten the guy tackled at, like, the 20-yard line. Now they're going to take a minute and a half and still score the touchdown, but there's only going to be 20 seconds left. That would have freaked me out. Him scoring, us getting the ball right back, minute 49, three timeouts. I was, you know, it's easy to take Bake for granted. And the Bucks offense, because they've been doing it so much. It's not easy. Even if they make it look easy, if they make it look automatic, it's not. And it probably was under 50% win odds, even though I didn't feel that way. Did you? Like, how did you feel when that happened? Because I was like, okay, you know, no freak out here. Nothing is bleeped, as the dude would say in the Big Lebowski. Nothing is bleeped. We just got to stay cool right now. And they did. They went right back down and got it done. I thought the Jets mismanaged a few other things, too, especially before the end of the first half. The Jamel Dean pick six, which they never should have come to that for the Jets. But honestly, even as he's scoring the touchdown, I wasn't even thinking about the touchdown. I was just thinking, oh man, this is awesome. We got an actual interception, because it feels like forever since the Bucks have intercepted a pass. Forget the return. I was just glad to get any interception, and Jamel Dean hangs on to that. And that was kind of my we're going to win moment, even though it proved not to be. At that time, I was like, oh yeah, we're going to win today. You know, you don't get a pick six like that right before half and go up two scores. This Bucks team's not losing this game. And of course, they did win the game, but they also eventually did trail in the game before winning it at the end. But a good job by him, obviously. I know there was a video out there talking about how, you know, he's got maybe defensive back hands, as they say, not wide receiver hands. And they were all like, oh, wow, Jamel caught the ball. You know, all the sideline, the players were all joking. So it was nice to see that. A few other things that stood out. Yaya Diaby. Been saying we need more from him. He had a big day with not just a sack, but eight pressures, one full 33.3, one-third pass rush win rate in all of his dropbacks on Sunday. So it was nice to get a big game out of him. Antoine Winfield Jr. had a sack. Here was a stat that blew my mind about that. He is now, that's his 18th career sack, Antoine Winfield Jr. He's now in the top 10 all time in the history of the NFL since they started tracking stats, I should say, which is 1982, but I doubt anybody pre-1982, a defensive back, tops this. Top 10 all-time for defensive backs in total sacks. 18 career. So that's pretty cool on its own. But what blew my mind was Antoine Winfield Jr. has played 110 fewer games than anybody else, any of the other nine guys in the top 10. So he's, you know, but 110 more games will just put him even in games played with all those other guys, and who knows where he'll be in sacks by then. But that was pretty cool to see. And then the offensive line, I'll say this, you know, we were worried about him going into the game, and it wasn't, they weren't awesome, okay? A lot of holding penalties, they were doing whatever they had to do. I thought Charlie Heck held up pretty well, and Todd Bowles even said he's better at right tackle than left tackle. You know, we didn't take him away from left tackle and reshuffle our entire offensive line because we thought he's incompetent, but he is better at right tackle, and it worked. I mean, again, he did okay. They'll get Worf's back this weekend. They may be able to, you know, shore up the left side. The right side will still be a little bit shaky, but I thought it was okay there. I mean, yeah, give props to him. And also, here's another thing that's kind of making the offensive line look a lot better and maybe not as bad as we hoped. The EPA per play added, estimated probability added is what EPA is. It's a good stat, whether you think a lot of people don't know what it is, but it just basically means win probability added per play, and it's just based on situations. You know, what are your odds of winning when you're up so-and-so score with so-and-such time left on third and five from the so-and-so yard line? Next play happens. Okay, now what's the new situation? Probability added or lost. Simple. Anyway, ranking the NFL quarterbacks on EPA per play, only on dropbacks where they were under pressure, where they didn't have a clean pocket. Okay? So these numbers for everybody are bad. Like, that's just they're always going to be worse than the overall numbers, okay? Numbers under pressure, of course. Number three in the NFL, this is the third best quarterback under pressure in the NFL, according to these numbers, is Josh Allen. Negative 0.2, okay? So that means quarterbacks number 3 through 32 all have negative EPA per dropback. Just having any kind of positive EPA per dropback is really good. Number two is Jared Goff. Okay, he's got a 0.5 EPA per dropback. That's really good. Okay? Again, any positive EPA only under pressure, this is again only under pressure, is really good because most of the time you're going to have a negative EPA when they're getting pressure on the quarterback. So number one is Baker Mayfield. I will give you just a beat here to try and guess what his EPA per play is on dropbacks where he is under pressure, with number two being 0.5 and number three being negative 0.2. What do you think the leader has? Because I would have guessed probably something like, oh, he's probably pretty good, maybe, you know, 0.8, maybe 1.4. Yeah, maybe he's really good. 13.7 EPA per play, plus 13.7. when pressured, which is insane. Like, he is more than 20 times better under pressure so far than the next closest guy. And only two people in the whole NFL have even anything positive above 0.0. And the other guy's got 0.5. He's got 13.7. That is both completely unbelievable and two, completely unsustainable. Like, you don't think we're going to keep allowing this much pressure and it's all going to go well. And there's been some turnover-worthy plays that didn't actually turn into turnovers. But the picks will happen. I mean, those are a thing for any quarterback. Mayfield's had a little bit of an issue with them under pressure, especially any quarterback. I mean, they're going to have to get better at protecting. And so they come in this weekend. You know, and it does help a little bit. Again, not that we ever wish for injuries, but Eagles edge, Nolan Smith is out. Actually, he's out for the year. Has a triceps thing. So that's a big loss for them in this game. Let's look at the injuries in this game, since we're talking about injuries. All right. Baker Mayfield had a little biceps thing. He's out there on the practice field today. He's wearing a sleeve on the right arm, but throwing normally. So to me, and I'm not playing doctor here without knowing, but he didn't look like if your bicep is really hurt and you're trying to play on Sunday and you're worried about it, you probably would be taking it very, very easy today. He's throwing normally. The sleeve's probably just for some precautionary thing, but he should be all right. Tristan Wirfs at practice today. Again, I'm doing this show on Thursday. Normal go. He was out there just like everybody else practicing. He looks pretty good to play on Sunday, as they've been talking about. Chris Godwin, he's only going 2 days a week, so today wasn't one of the days, and that Greg Aubin even reported that, said don't read into that. That doesn't mean he's any more or less likely to play Sunday. He should play too. Now, how much he'll be, like, Tristan Wirfs is just going to be in there. That's it, left tackle. You know, receiver's a little bit different. They can ease you in. You can play a certain amount of snaps. It's still going to be Amika Abuka, and now Sterling Shepard. Oh, that's another one I forgot to mention in the Jets game. Sterling Shepard's been coming up really big for the Bucs. As a guy who's like a fourth or even fifth receiver and been thrust into the role in injuries because of all that. Same thing last season. He was doing it last year. He's obviously got a great rapport with Baker Mayfield going back to their Oklahoma days together. He has been really clutch and made a bunch of big plays again. And love the way, not just the big plays he's made, but love the way he plays in general. He plays all out, flat out, does not take a playoff. Even when he's not the guy, and usually when everybody's healthy, obviously with Mike Evans and Abuka, and, you know, now Godwin, he's usually not the number one option on any route. But it doesn't matter. He runs every route, balls to the wall, whether it's a clear out route or whether he may or may not get the ball, doesn't matter to him. Really like what he's been able to do. And so we'll see how much Godwin plays. But they've got a reliable top two. Now, Abuka, this will be the first week where Abuka's kind of got the, you know, big X drawn on him. Like, it's one thing to be opposite of Evans and you're a rookie. And even though you're very much hyped, you know, nobody's really seen you do much yet. So now everybody knows what Abuka can do, and he's the number one guy on the field. So I expect the Eagles to do a lot to take him away, which is going to bring even more Sterling Shepard's efforts into the spotlight, for better or worse. And I think he's up for it. And we'll see if Chris Godwin can be a factor. I mean, he'll play, but let's see how much he can really factor. And he might get out there and feel great and just play a ton. Who knows? But he did not practice today. Again, planned. Not because there's any type of complication. Of course, Mike Evans is out with the hamstring now for a few weeks. It is at least good. The Bucs have not put Mike Evans on IR, so he'll be inactive. But if they thought he was going to be out for more than a few games, he'd be on IR because that limits you. You can't come back until four more games. They didn't want to do that, which hopefully means he can be back in two or three games. The injury is similar to the one he had last year. He missed three last year with this similar type of hamstring injury. So we'll see if that makes any difference. On defense, you've got Logan Hall, who was out there at practice today, but he was working on the side, not part of the main practice. He's working on a groin thing. We'll see. And Christian Izzian looks like he's going to be out. He wasn't out there at practice today. Other than that, things aren't bad. Desmond Watson, Big Des Watson from Armwood and from the University of Florida. He has been signed. He did make his weight. He does look pretty good, but he's not going to be active this weekend. A lot of people thought that the Bucs were trying something cute with the tush push, and we're going to bring in the 450-pounder, and that actually was not part of the plan. It has nothing to do with playing the Eagles. They think they can use him as a player, and they're going to keep him on the timeline that they've had him on since they realized he could, you know, hit the number he needs to on the scale. So he's not playing this weekend either way. And like I said, the Eagles are going through a little bit of an injury thing too with their edge guy Nolan Smith out. It all adds up. But here's the numbers I was talking about earlier that made me feel a little bit better. And we all, everybody's like, oh, the Bucs have the Eagles number. The Eagles, they can't handle the Bucs in Tampa. I mean, you know, Jalen Hurts is 1-4 against Todd Bowles' defenses. The Eagles have been beaten down here twice in the playoffs. Also, last year's regular season game, which was an easy Bucs win, even though the Eagles didn't have A.J. Brown then. And really, it's not, I don't think, anything mythic. Here's some numbers for you. Jalen Hurts, this year alone, it's only been three games, he's 28th versus the blitz compared to the standard pass rush. He has the 28th worst deviation of performance when blitzed versus standard. He doesn't do well against the rush, basically, okay? And that's just this year, which is a small sample size. But last year, a full season, he was 26th against the blitz, okay? Well, this is a Todd Bowles Bucs defense. They've got the sixth highest blitz rate. I think the Bucs and I think Todd Bowles, they're good at disrupting what Jalen Hurts likes to do. So again, that's not some aura or mystique or some weird thing. It's not even the Tampa Heat, probably. It's just that. So we'll see what Nick Sirianni can come up with to counter that, as the Bucs have had a pretty good run of success against Jalen Hurts, and Todd Bowles' defense in particular have had a pretty good run of success. I think the screen game is a big part of it. The Bucs have not had great success defending the screen game, and since, you know, that gets the ball out quick, plus running the ball. I mean, Saquon Barkley is always going to be a handful trying to stop him running the ball, but the Bucs' run defense, I think, is up for that. They've been phenomenal. It doesn't mean Barkley couldn't pop off for triple digits. He very well may. But hitting him on screens where the Bucks have a weakness, in, especially in the linebacking core, handling screen passes, that's probably their best bet. Some numbers from Dr. Bob Stoll. I always like to look at the, if there's any gambling angles, I want to know about them. And he didn't specify the specific situation, but there is an early season road favorite situation that applies to the Eagles that is 20-50-2. So I always talk about like situations and spots. Sometimes it's not even about the two teams as much as it's about the spot. And so the Eagles are in a spot that other teams historically are not good in. And the Eagles are a 3.5-point favorite as of this recording, at least. So the Eagles could win by three. Still wouldn't have covered the spread. That situation still would have applied, and the Bucs still would have lost. But just letting you know, the cold hard numbers, courtesy of Dr. Bob. Again, Eagles a 3.5-point favorite. They're in a road favorite, early season road favorite situation that is 20 wins, 50 losses, and two against the spread now, not straight up, all time. So, hey. And we will tell you, we told you in week one the Bucs were against a bad angle. Home underdogs in week one, which the Falcons were in division games, are fire. They always win. They always cover. Well, the Bucs pulled it off. Although, but did the Falcons cover in week one? I can't remember if that situation worked or not. But anyway, don't take any of this, you know, to the bank. This is all just a grain of salt, but these are actual numbers, and they matter. So that's the long and short of it, folks. And I'll tell you what else, we got a hell of a sports weekend coming up here, especially if you're into more than just football. I mean, football alone will carry you because we've got the Thursday night game. Tonight is Seahawks at the Cardinals. And then after that, you've got FSU's got a Friday game this week, I believe, at Virginia, if you're a local FSU fan, plus high school football. Saturday's loaded with good college football games. It was kind of a down week last week a little bit, but this week's got some really good games. And then, of course, all the NFL on Sunday. But we got the Ryder Cup, which I always love the Ryder Cup. If you're, I don't know how many people are golf fans, but the Ryder Cup is one of the most fun parts of golf. Only every 2 years. That's this weekend. We've got the final weekend of the baseball regular season. A lot of races coming down to it, which I know the Rays aren't actually involved, but it's still fun after all this long season to see all the stuff get decided. So between that and all the football going on, and then, of course, Monday Night Football will round it out, it's going to be a great weekend. Enjoy yourself. Wherever you are, oh, I dropped my speaker. There we go. Got to get the outro music going. But wherever you are, whatever you're doing, if you're going to the Bucks game, stay cool, hydrate, wear a hat. You know, just do your best to keep your body out of the direct sun. Not just for the heat, but it's just bad for you. Like, you know, you have premature wrinkling, skin cancer, all that stuff. That's the main thing. Heat you can handle. And hopefully the players handle it as well. But no matter what, whether you're going, having people over, just watching at home alone, be safe, have fun, have a great sports weekend, the final weekend of September. I'll be back next week, hopefully talking about a 4-0 Buccaneer football team. But either way, no matter what happens on Sunday, wherever you are, good morning, good afternoon, good night, and go Bucks.